glad you stood up because I was about to. All right. When Chris said, let's sing, let's all sing, I thought he said stand too. I'm with you, man. We're on the same side. All right. I'm just glad you did it first because I was starting to come up and I saw you. A preacher friend of mine came into my office one day and said, I need to talk to you. And I could tell by his face that he really did need to talk. He was a young man. I was pretty young myself, but he was several years younger than me. He was preaching for a small congregation nearby. I was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and he was in a little small congregation nearby. He had been there for about 3 years, and it was his first work out of school. And he had taken that ministry, that job, on an extremely low salary. He had two school-aged children. They lived in a church-owned house, which was probably the only way that that congregation could have had even close to come to have a full-time preacher. He drove an older automobile that required lots of work along the way. And so he sat down and began by telling me what his salary was, and it was extremely small. And he said, Ken, when I took this work, I thought that there would be some raise sooner or later. He said, but I've just finished my third year, and nobody's ever said a word about a raise. There's been nothing. He said, so Sunday, I swallowed my pride and asked the men of the congregation to meet with me, and I told them about my financial situation, and I told them that I wanted to stay here, but I was not going to be able to unless they gave me a raise. And they told me that they'd talk about it and get back with me on the next Wednesday evening. He said, so Wednesday night, brother, and he named a brother that we both knew, came to me and said, we talked about the situation, and we decided that we would give you a raise. He said, what we decided we would do is that we would get last year's electricity bill for the house you're living in, and each month that you lower the bill, we will give you that much in a raise. And so if in the summertime you're willing to turn your thermostat up so it'll be a little warmer, then whatever the difference is, you can have. And in the wintertime, if you're willing to turn your thermostat down, then you can have that difference. And so you can have whatever size raise you want. Now, I don't know how that makes you feel, but it kind of, the hair on the back of my neck said, you know, and tears were flowing down his face. He was telling me, and he was really discouraged. And I understand. And by the way, I intervened on his behalf. It didn't do any good, but I did anyway. And it turned out that he was not able to stay there very much longer, but he was really discouraged. And I want to talk a little about discouragement, because discouragement visits us all for a variety of reasons. And I wish I could tell you that I had never been discouraged, but I wouldn't be truthful. I have, like many of you, I would say all of you, if you've been alive very long, I have felt that heavy hand of discouragement in my heart also, like you have. No one is immune to it. Charles Spurgeon wrote in Lectures to My Students, fits of depression come over most of us. Usually, cheerful as we may be, we must at intervals be cast down. The strong are not always vigorous. The wise are not always ready. The brave are not always courageous, and the joyous are not always happy. There may be here and there men of iron, but surely the rust frets even these. Let me make it clear that I don't claim to be any kind of expert on the psychology of discouragement. What I know about it is based almost totally on my personal experience and observation from 40-plus years of preaching and my understanding of what the Bible teaches about how to not be perhaps more than it is, but we do see certain examples of discouragement. And I'd like to lay a little bit of groundwork, foundation work, and talk about, first of all, let's talk about what we're discussing, discouragement. And discouragement literally means to lose your courage. And when you ask, well, what is courage? Well, in this life, courage is the ability to face life with confidence and resolution. And so discouragement is the loss of confidence and resolution in your life. And consequently, it takes away your ability to effectively face life and the things that come your way. Depression is a long spell of intense discouragement. F.E. Marsh wrote, "Discontentment and disappointment often lead to discouragement, and discouragement leads to depression, and these together breed despair." How does discouragement affect us? Well, what are some of the signs? Well, one of them is it causes us to question our effectiveness. And I will tell you that I approach this and will address this at least somewhat from a preacher's standpoint. Because, quite frankly, preachers are prone to discouragement. We say, whenever we question our effectiveness, I'm not accomplishing what I set out to do or what I feel like the Lord wants me to do. Am I making a difference in anyone's life? And quite often, as we look around ourselves and we try to evaluate our effectiveness, then quite often it's true that there are only one or two or three people maybe in the congregation that we feel like I've really made a difference in that person's life. And so quite often, it's not unusual that whenever we evaluate things like that, that what keeps us going is not so much everybody and what everybody thinks, as much as it is that there are a few people that I realize that I have made a difference in their lives. And that is extremely meaningful. It also can, discouragement can cause us to grow cynical. And we feel like it doesn't matter what I do, nothing's going to change. And when we're getting to that point, we're obviously discouraged. It robs us of our resolve. It robs us of our dreams. It robs us of, of our energy. You feel tired. You feel lost. You feel empty. And it's usually accompanied by a feeling of loneliness. Men, particularly, are lonely creatures. We've been taught to not need anyone. And so we try to order our lives quite often so that we don't depend on anybody, so that we don't need anybody. And preachers tend to be, sometimes, the loneliest of all. You can't let them see you sweat. You just have to keep playing through. And it can even come to a point of psychosomatic illnesses. Psyche is a Greek word for mind, and soma is a word for body, and so you put them together. Psyche, or psychosomatic, means your mind tells your body that it's sick. It's not necessarily anything physically wrong with you, but your mind has taken control of your body, and you have all the symptoms. So, discouragement affects us in lots of ways. When does it come? What are some of the things that causes discouragement? And there's no one-size-fits-all here. There's no simple answer to that because it's a wide variety of things. An observation, a word to, and a word about, again, preachers. A generation ago, most preachers moved every 3 or 4 years. In fact, when I moved to one of the congregations that I moved to, one of the deacons came to me and said, His dad happened to be a preacher, and I knew his dad, but by the way, he said, I've never known a preacher that was worth his salt that stayed more than 3 years in any one place. Well, he kind of set the tone, you know, he thought, for that, and quite honestly, that was what he had experienced through his childhood. But preachers are staying longer these days. Some of you may wish that wasn't true, but it is. Among the many things that has resulted from that is you're not trying to live in a perpetual honeymoon. Does that make sense to any of you? Whenever you move, whenever a preacher moves, you get along and you like him because you don't know him. And he gets along with the congregation because he doesn't know the congregation. But after a while, a couple of years at the outside, you start knowing him. You find out some things about him that you don't particularly care for. And by the way, just so that you'll know, he may find out a few things about you that he doesn't particularly care for. And so we come to a point. It has not been unusual in the past at this point that it's time for the preacher to move on. And so it occurs to me that there are at least certain circumstances and perhaps certain individuals that are able to operate only in the environment that you don't know me and I don't know you. And when we get to the point that that's no longer true, then we start having to deal with some things that we've not dealt with before. You're staying past Monday morning. And I know you've heard me use that phrase before, and I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but Monday morning is when the bills come due. It's when the building is already built and we're in it and everything's going fine, except now, on the first of the month, we've got a note of a few thousand dollars. And who's going to stay around and make sure that that gets taken care of? Who's going to be the one to stay after all the excitement is done and clean up? Who's going to be the one to volunteer to teach the class? Who's going to be the one that volunteers to take care of the things that have to be done day in and day out? And there are lots of preachers and there are lots of individuals who pride themselves in being good starters, but then they move on. And so, if you haven't learned it yet about life, then let me be the first one to tell you, Monday morning is Monday morning all over the world. And quite literally, missionaries learn this. Sometimes missionaries go to the mission field because they don't like what they think they're going to have to face in dealing with local congregations or doing a local work or whatever, and they get to the mission field and they, for a year or so, just like a preacher who comes into a congregation a year or two, then you view things through a certain lens and everything's wonderful, and then all of a sudden one day it all comes into focus and it's Monday morning. And are you going to stay or are you going to leave? Now you know what the problems are. And now you're getting some criticism from people because they know something about you. And so you're going to have to decide if you're going to deal with that. If you run from Monday morning all your life, you're never going to grow up. You have to stay on Monday morning. You don't very often get to move away from the real problems that you face because most of the real problems have to do with you inside and knowing how to deal with circumstances and situations. When you stay, you find out where the bones are buried. And the folks find out where you have buried your bones. And some can take that and some can't. As preachers, we get to find out whether we really love preaching or whether we love the idea of preaching. There's a difference, you know. When you're young, you love the idea of preaching. You see somebody standing up in front of a congregation and you see people listening and you just think, boy, that's really the life. And you love the idea of preaching. And there are lots of young men that fall in love with the idea of preaching. But to be really blunt with you, preaching is hard work. And I know there's every joke, I've heard them all. I've heard all of them about a dozen times or 100 times. About a preacher only works one day a week, you know. But preaching's hard work if you're conscientious. So, do we love the brethren or do we love the idea of loving the brethren? There's a difference. And when you stay, by necessity, you have to deal with the difficulties that come with being around for a while. And consequently, most preachers will experience some periods of discouragement, which can turn into depression, which can turn into burnout. And I have dealt with good friends who have gone through all of those, some of whom are no longer preaching today, some of whom are. Discouragement can come from an incredibly wide variety of sources. To demonstrate how wide a variety, discouragement can come from not having enough activity. And discouragement can come from having too much activity. Discouragement can come from not having enough responsibility. And it can come from having too much responsibility. And so I guess that's about as wide as you can get, isn't it? Is it discouraging to have nothing going on? Well, it is if you have some ambition, isn't it? If you want to see things happening, then when nothing is happening, there's little or no meaningful activity. Has there anyone ever been where you can't get anybody to do anything? Or you feel that that's the case? You get discouraged when that happens. I know of congregations that are aggressive and they're filled with strong personalities and lots of exciting things going on. And with that, quite often comes, you get to referee lots of squabbles. And there are lots of personality conflicts. I've been there. I thought I had an ulcer after a while. But I've also been in congregations that I at least told them that they were about as happy as a dead pig in the sunshine, even though I don't know what that means. I've heard it all my life. I don't really know how happy a dead pig is, but anyway, I heard that all my life, and I told them they were almost as active also. But and I have decided for myself that if that's the choice between those two things, that I personally would take a good fight rather than nothing. Nothing is hard. Nothing is hard for me. We can list dozens of things that cause discouragement. One thing is you don't get enough sleep. Really, fatigue. You're just tired. You're going. Young parents can experience that. They're just constantly on the go. They have to get up before daylight. They don't get to go to bed quite often until the wee hours of the morning sometime, and then you're awakened by a child crying or a sick child or something, and that goes on, and you get just completely worn out. Your body is tired, and you're fatigued. You're sometimes trying to wear too many hats. Preachers try to please everybody in the congregation, and that's not possible because there are some people that act like they're 14 years old perpetually. And you know about a 14-year-old, right? They don't like you because they don't even like themselves. Really? That's a little hint to you parents. If your child tells you they hate you, well, big deal, they hate themselves. You know, so it's not that big a shocking deal when they're about that age. So, fatigue. Trying to please too many people. Also, another thing that causes discouragement is finances. Any of you ever get discouraged over finances? Another is family problems. And this one will take the wind out of your sails. This one will hurt really, really deeply, doesn't it? It'll take the heart right out of you. I had an acquaintance, preacher, friend, who was preaching. He had a rebellious daughter, and he worked and tried to change that. He couldn't change it. One day, he walked out behind an abandoned house and shot and killed himself. Shocked everybody. Nobody had any idea that it had reached that point. But family problems will take the heart out of you, won't they? They're incredibly discouraging. Inability to bring about any change. I have all these examples of preacher friends, because that's the only friends that I have, but no kidding, I'm not kidding. But I don't have many of them anymore, but I had a friend who told me one time that he had been in the congregation 22 years and nothing was happening, so he got up one Sunday and he said, okay, I'm a patient guy, but I've been here 22 years, it's time to fish or cut bait And so he had some proposal that he made to them. And I understand that sometimes we get so frustrated we just say, okay, something has got to happen. There's got to be something that's done. Lots of young preachers are discouraged because they want to see some change. And there are some of these things that we can do. And it's not just preachers. I'm holding preachers up because we can all laugh at preachers, right? But it's true of everybody. And these things are true of young people. Quite often can become discouraged when you think they don't have anything to be discouraged about. And they look at you and they don't think you've got anything to be discouraged about. And so you don't know until you get into somebody's life, because we're pretty good at putting a mask on, aren't we? And we're pretty good at pasting a smile on our face regardless of how we feel. And believe it or not, the inability to bring about change can cause us to be discouraged, but so can uncontrollable change. Things are happening so fast around us that we feel like everything's out of control. And it's really easy to feel that way today if you turn on the news and you watch the news too much. How many of you don't have to raise your hand, but how many of you feel discouraged because you watch the news too much? I'll raise my hand. I'm one. And there are times that I remind myself, why do I do this to myself? You know, why do I read these headlines and these stories, and why do I listen to this? And sometimes we're just pumping our life so full of bad news that how can you not be discouraged? That's why there's another reason we need to be studying our Bibles, putting something good in our lives and in our hearts. In a world where there is a moral decline, and there are addictions and pornography and all of the problems that are around the world, it seems like everywhere we look, and there are just problems upon problems upon problems. But you know, if we were able to be honest about it, you could slice history at any given moment, and those things would be true. I'm not saying that there are not worse things happening now than there are, have been, or maybe at other times, but I'm saying at any given moment in history, you can find things to be discouraged about, and you can find things. Sometimes you have to look. You have to look in small places to find things to really be encouraged about. But there are lots of good things that are happening in the world. There are lots of good things happening with our young people. They're sitting right here. And most of them are listening right now. And so there are lots of good things that you can find in our lives to help overcome discouragement. Another is measuring yourself by others. And we look at other people. And maybe other people compare us, you know, with someone else. And we don't feel very good about it. And we think, why can't I be like this person? Why can't I preach like this person? Or why can't I preach for a church like that? And so measuring yourself by others can be really discouraging. Also having no visible fruit. Have you ever had a dry spell in your life? You just keep on doing the same things and nothing just seems like nothing's going right. And you just keep on and you get to the point where it just seems like it doesn't matter. You break ground, you plant, you water, you fertilize, you pull weeds, and you don't get anything for it. Feel like a failure. And then sometimes it's because you're in a situation, maybe on the job, maybe in the church, maybe in your home, where leadership is not going the right direction, and you feel helpless to change that. And you're in that situation, you have to learn how to live with that. Do you ever feel like, well, everything depends on me. If I don't get it done, then nobody's going to do it. And then there's criticism. And we could all spend some time here, couldn't we? The first congregation that I preached at, there was a lady whom I came to respect and appreciate, but she could read Greek language much better than I could. And so, inevitably, and you can ask my wife, I'm not stretching this, every single Sunday, about the time we sat down for a meal, the phone rang. And she was calling me to critique my lesson. And I promise you, Sunday meal was not a very pleasant experience for me. because every single Sunday she did. And I got to the point that I sat down. There was a knot in my stomach because I knew the phone was about to ring. She did it just about the same time every day, every Sunday afternoon. And that did not particularly endear her to me, to say the least. And I once, also, we remember, isn't it funny how we remember the things that we shouldn't and the things that we should, we forget. We remember if somebody said something really hurtful to us, don't we? Isn't it funny? That it's not ha-ha funny, as my mother used to say, but it's peculiar that we remember those things. I remember the first sermon that I preached in a place when I got there, there was a man who was really angry that the last preacher had left. And so on his way out of the door, when I preached my first sermon, he looked at me and he said, "You'll never be half the preacher that so-and-so was or is." And I looked at him and I said, "You're probably right." But that didn't endear me to him either. And he got over it. He got over it. He was angry. We say things sometimes when we're angry, don't we? And the truth is, he was probably right. Advice. Learn not to fear it. Don't overreact to it. Consider the source. And sometimes look behind what somebody says. Maybe they're hurting. And maybe it's just their way of a release. Remember, every criticism is just someone's opinion. And besides, looking back, most of what people hit me with was true. Maybe not to the degree that they put it out there, but most of it had some truth in it. And so if we can be big enough to handle criticism, and we don't have to let it discourage us, regardless of what somebody's purpose is. Know this, when you're facing discouragement, and it's inevitable that in a congregation this size, there are some folks right now, here, that are struggling with discouragement for some reason or other. And I want you to know, so have I. I've struggled with it. And so has every single person who has ever tried to accomplish anything has struggled with it. So you're in good company. Nobody can avoid it, but it doesn't have to lead to depression and despair. In general, discouragement comes when we feel like we have unsolvable problems. And you may live in circumstances which cannot be changed. There are some like that, aren't there? There are some circumstances and situations that we don't have the power to control. They're out of our control. Some problems can be changed and some cannot. Most problems are problems because they don't have a simple solution. It can be debt. It can be family problems. It can be any number of things. And there is no one single simple solution to all of those. And even though you may live in circumstances which cannot be changed, Jesus Christ gives us the victory. That's the beauty of being a Christian. You've been promised that you won, that you have the victory. It's yours. You're going to have to fight the battles. You don't know how serious they may be. You don't know where they may come from. But you're going to have to fight the battles of life. But you don't have to fight them alone. And even though you may get discouraged and feel like that you're not being very effective in dealing with life circumstances, then know this. It really is going to all be okay. In fact, it's going to be a lot better than okay. And on that day, when we stand before Him and He says, "Well done, good, faithful servant," then all of these things will fade into the background, and they won't seem to be very significant at all. You can put your mind on good things, and remember these circumstances will surely pass. This too shall pass. And so if you're feeling that heavy hand of discouragement in your life to some degree, be encouraged. Lift your vision up from those circumstances that have you discouraged and look at Jesus. Look at the cross and keep your eyes on Him while we stand and sing.